Good day and welcome to the 2013 Q1 IMS teleconference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to hand the conference over to Mr. Mark Wilson. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the call. I've got a number of my senior team joining me, including Pat Wigan, the CFO, and the heads of the major business units. Today's results demonstrate, I think, early steps, good first steps towards delivery of our investment thesis. We spoke a lot about cash flow and growth. That's what we're focusing on as a business. What I'll do is go through the highlights and lowlights of the results, and then we'll have plenty of time to take questions from there on. We have clear objectives, we've got clear plans, and in the first quarter basically we're delivering what we said we would. And from my perspective, it's been a satisfactory start to the year, and we have a great deal more to do for our shareholders. Now, as we covered in the investment thesis of the full year, we're managing our business by focusing on five key metrics: cash flow, expenses, value of new business, combined operating ratio in the GI business, and of course the IFRS operating profit. And as usual, we'll update on the profits at the half year rather than at the quarter. So in the first quarter, we've made progress against these metrics. We're focusing the business on cash, we're focusing on reducing expenses, we're focusing on growing the value of new business, and maintaining the profitability in the general insurance book. We've also strengthened the balance sheet in the quarter. So if I take each of these metrics in turn and just go over the key points, I think. So firstly, cash flow. So as you know, we have four main contributors to cash flow in the group: UK Life, UK General Insurance, France, and Canada. And we're managing these businesses together with the other established markets to improve cash flows. Now, the operating cash generation, as you know, is a precursor to cash. And in the first quarter, we generated 0.5 billion pounds of OCG. This is in line with the previous year. We're taking action to improve the remittance ratios from OCG to dividends, and obviously we won't be able to give much of an update on that till as we go through the year. But that's progressing very much on plan. Reducing the expenses is important for us to remain efficient and competitive and get the cash flows through, and there are two key parts to our expense plan. So the first, as you know, is to deliver the £400 million in the cost saving target. The second part, and frankly equally as important, is to reduce the restructuring costs. We're focused on those. As you know, in the restructuring costs, we've had restructuring costs every year for many years, and it's up to us to get them to a more modest level. So in the first quarter, the group's expenses fell by 10%, that's the operating expenses, and we're on track to deliver the £400 million run rate cost savings target by the end of the year. Frankly, we can deliver more cost savings. What we're still ascertaining is what we do with those, and some of the cost savings above that level will be reallocated to important things like fixing IT and doing other things like that. And that's pretty much as I said at the full year results. Reducing our costs involves some fairly tough calls. We announced last month that we'll reduce our global staff by 2,000 roles across the group. That's about 6% of our global workforce. And we're doing other savings and things like consultancy and IT and rental accommodation. I mean, there's a whole long list that Nick Amin and his team are focusing on, and again, making satisfactory progress. Now, as well as the 400 target I mentioned before, of course, we need to lower these restructuring costs over time, and you'll be aware last year these costs were 460 million. In fact, if you go back, I think, 10 years, its average is probably between 250 and the 460 million. In the first quarter, these restructuring costs are £54 million. I expect this quarterly run rate will increase during the year. I mean, this doesn't include, obviously, the 2,000 redundancies or they do include some of them, but not many of the 2,000 redundancies. And so you would expect the run rate of that cost, restructuring cost, to increase. In future years, we would expect these costs to be much more modest, although in 2013 you will still see reasonably substantial costs in this area, although lower than the 460 saw last year. Now the second part of our investment thesis, of course, is growth. And I said it for you, I don't expect you to give us a whole lot of credit for growth yet. We're a turnaround story at this point in time. But we do have good options for growth in both established markets and in the emerging markets, particularly in Poland, Turkey and Asia. As I said at the full-year results, our key measure of growth is value of new business. Just to be clear, this is an MCEV basis, so it's a fairly conservative basis. But that basis, on a like-with-like, which it is, increased by 18% to £191 million. Now, I'm aware that these levels of growth would be consistent with a growth stock, and I just want to manage expectations here a little bit, that in this regard we have a lot of work to do to get consistency in these and get the product margins we require. We're only just starting on this journey. I wouldn't expect that level of growth to continue throughout the whole year. I think we can get good growth, but 18% I think is pretty good across the group. Now, highlights in our development markets were the UK and France. In the UK, the value of new business was up 33%, and that's as a result of a number of actions. It's a large part pricing, reduction in expenses, mix of product. There's a whole lot of things in it. In particular, annuities did well. But I do expect the growth rates in UK life will moderate from these levels in the second half of the year, in particular. The UK life business, well, we're on that point, is adapting well to the introduction of the retail distribution review. And it's an important point, I guess, that 80% of the business has got nothing to do with the RDR in our life business, and it's performed well. The platform business and some other initiatives we're taking are going pretty well at the moment. And again, I would classify it as satisfactory, I think, at this time. In France, the value of new business is up about 11%, and that's the strong performances from the Affair group, and protection sales have been good, which that mix of business has helped us in terms of our value of new business. And the growth markets, Poland, Turkey and Asia. Poland was, I think, somewhat disappointing. We've got a lot of work to do. We do see this as a very attractive market, and we've got much to do, and we're making some progress. David McMillan's taken over all of that European operations and he's getting the grips of those issues very quickly indeed. Turkey, we have an excellent local partner in the Sabancı Group, which I'm sure most of you will know of. And that increased by value of new business by 67%. That's showing some nice growth in the execution of the plans. Asia as well was also very strong, 29%. We're delighted with the start Kohofson's making. There's a lot of work to do on pricing and product mix, and we're really only really just starting what we do there. The performance in Asia, I guess, is more in line with my expectations, and we have particularly good performance from Singapore and China in particular. Delivered strong VNB. The value of new business in several other markets, frankly, was disappointing, and there's clear scope for improvement. In Spain and Italy, the value of new business fell to £3 million and £4 million respectively, partly driven by the lower euro risk-free rate used to calculate VNB on the value of new business on an MCEV basis. That adds a little bit of volatility that perhaps you don't see in others that don't use a full MCEV basis like we do. And it's also partly due to mix and some product issues. So those businesses under David McMillan's leadership are a work in progress. We're continuing to take action, and that is a key focus for the group, and we have some work to do, and that's the work on pricing, on product mix, on managing guarantees, and reducing expenses. and that will take some time. In general insurance, our key performance metric is the core, and this was level in the first quarter, 96%. Strong performance in Canada, where the core was 93%, and that's really, again, our highly sophisticated pricing and risk selection coming through. In the UK, the core was 98%. You know, that's in line with our expectations for the, and it was a, I'll call it a resilient performance in the winter quarter. The UK motor rates continued to soften, and we didn't chase the share on that. In Ireland, our performance is unsatisfactory, and that had a core of 108% and remained very much a work in progress. Again, that would be one of the businesses I very much put in the turnaround space. And we're taking a number of actions in Ireland, including substantial cost reduction and also leveraging the scale and underwriting expertise of the UK business, running parts of that operation from the UK. And that will take some time. Now, finally, we've also taken further steps to simplify the business and to strengthen the balance sheet. And again, I think that's a highly satisfactory quarter. In the quarter, we sold our remaining stake in Delta Lloyd for £353 million. We completed the sale of our business in Malaysia for £152 million. We completed the sale of Russian business. And in April, of course, we received the €608 million in cash for the transfer of Asfalt, the bank here in Spain. Now, it's important to note, I think, as well, that the businesses that we sold, their contribution to OCG has in the past been minimal, and the dividends minimal or some years negative. So we haven't had major impacts in the earning or OCG and cash, or more particularly the OCG and cash, which is our investment thesis, from the sale of these businesses, and that's helpful. I should point out we are still cleaning up and simplifying our business further. There will be further sales. I wouldn't expect them in the next quarter. These are some complicated and tricky sales. They don't count for a whole lot of cash, and we'll announce those as they come along. But they also don't count for any earnings, so it shouldn't impact the earnings profile of the group. Now, in line with our aim to reduce internal leverage that we've said to you all at the half year by £600 million over 3 years, we have reduced the balance by £300 million to date, which is helpful. The balance sheet's been strengthened. The net asset value per share increased by 9% to 302 pence, and that was primarily due to profits in the quarter, a little bit of favourable investment variance as well, but mainly profits. Our economic capital position remains within our target range, increased marginally, with a pro forma economic capital surplus of 173% or £7.3 billion. So that's, I think, the summary. Aviva is a turnaround story. These results demonstrate some early steps in delivering our investment thesis of cash flow and growth. I am trying to manage expectations a bit. I've had results, I think, encouraging, and feedback this morning seems to be that they are positive, but I am also very conscious of the challenges, and I don't want to set the expectations at an unrealistic level. The progress so far has been satisfactory or very satisfactory, and there is a great deal more we need to do for our shareholders. So on that note, and I have my team here as well, I'd like to open the line to questions.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. To ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A voice prompt on your phone line will indicate when your line is open to ask your question. Also, please state your name before posing your question. Once again, it's star 1 to ask a question, and we will just pause for a moment to allow everybody to signal. We will now take our first question. Please go ahead.
Good morning. It's James Pearce from UBS. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, James. Good morning.
Morning. A couple of things. First of all, you've already hit your target for internal debt repayment. Do you want to set a revised target for the rest of the year, or how should we think about that? second, can you update us on the US disposal process and when you can expect to see the money in your bank account from them? And thirdly, could you talk about Canadian, or specifically Ontario, motor pricing in light of recent political noise?
Sure, James, we can do those three. First, in the internal debt. Now, the internal debt is in line with our expectations. We'd hope to be able to pay that early, and things have gone well. We're not going to change, just to be very clear on this, we're not going to change our cash flow target for internal debt replacement. And I'm choosing my words very carefully. The target was $600 million over 3 years in cash and $300 this year, and we've already done our $300 this year. However, I wouldn't assume that all of the actions you can take on internal leverage are about cash flow. There's a number of structural things we can do over time, and they won't be short time frames at all, but over time there's a number of other structural things you can do that don't involve cash flow. Now, I know the next question will be, well, what are they? We're not going to give any guidance on that at all today. But there's a lot of work going on, and this is a long-term initiative. And so just to be clear, no, we don't have any intention of paying that debt down more out of cash flow. The U.S. sale, I'll get Jason to update on. It is going to plan. There's really not a whole lot of news to update. Do you want to comment, Jess?
Sure, hi, James. There's not a lot to say. It's on track. The filings went into the Iowa and New York regulators as expected, and we are in that process with those regulators, and we expect the completion during the course of the second half.
And on Canada, we've been, I'm not sure whether Morris is on the line in Canada, but Morris has been very actively involved in the Ontario motor issue.
Mark, I am on the line. Can you hear me?
Excellent. Well, Mark, how about you update on that as you have been the ones in discussions with the government?
Sure. Thanks, Mark. Morning. James, let me probably some useful context. I mean, you do reference political noise. The noise commenced about 4 weeks ago. We have a three-party system here in Ontario, and the NDP party started making demands on the government, numerous demands, and one of them at the bottom of the list was auto insurance, and they were demanding rate reductions in the magnitude of 15%. Over the last 4 weeks, myself, a couple other CEOs, and the Insurance Bureau of Canada have lobbied for hundreds of hours with the government, and I think that resulted about 10 days ago in a pretty pleasing statement in the Ontario budget. And the budget effectively said that the government announced its intention to achieve an average rate reduction of 15% within a period of time to be subscribed by regulation. But I think what's really key is the government has linked any rate reduction to a cost reduction strategy. And the industry has very much lobbied that at the end of the day, rates can certainly fall, but they need to fall correspondingly with product reform. At this point, we're still going to wait for the budget to come out. Budget speeches are great, but it has to be moved through to regulation. But the industry has been very active, and at this point we're pleased with the government's intent to move forward with product reform and corresponding rate reductions. So we're very close to this file and managing it almost daily.
Okay, thank you very much.
We will now take our next question. Please go ahead.
Yeah, it's Blair Stewart here. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, Blair, hear you well. Good morning.
Yeah, thanks very much. Good morning. I've got a couple of questions. Firstly, Italian volumes were down year on year, but they were up quite substantially quarter on quarter. Just wonder what's going on there, given that there was a disappointing VNB result. Secondly, Asia saw, conflicting volumes, with Singapore up really strongly and Hong Kong down. Just wonder if you can give us a word on what's going on there. And then in non-life, the price versus volume effect would be useful. What sort of pricing is going through, particularly in the UK, where the premiums dropped 5%, And just talking about Canada, I just wonder what percentage of your business does come from Ontario. It'd be useful. Thank you.
Okay, there are a number of questions, and I'll share them around a bit here. Italy is pretty modest in terms of the group, as you know, and is certainly one of them I'd have in a turnaround. We're doing a whole lot of actions there, and but frankly, it was disappointing, and we need to do a whole lot more. That's about further reduce. It's a large amount on product mix, and that's taken a little bit of time to change, but they are taking the actions needed. I'll hand over to Pat, but part of it's a technical issue in terms of what's happening with the spreads and the underlying changes on that, which impacts the value of new business, and that's been a factor. Pat, do you want to comment more detail?
Yes, thanks. Hi, Bella. On the volumes, Blair, it is purely a seasonal thing. The first quarter in Italy is always the biggest quarter of the year, and that's been true for the last X number of years, and it's true across the industry. So that's why, in volume-wise, you see a higher first quarter than you saw fourth quarter. As Mark said, in terms of the VNB, there's still actually quite a lot to be done there, both in terms of product mix, more protection, less with profits. We've done a lot of work to bring down guarantee levels, but as interest rates keep coming down, there's still more work we need to do on that and the type of products we're selling there. So volumes are seasonal, but VNB is definitely still a work in progress.
That's clear, thank you.
On Asia, I'm pretty comfortable with the start cause made. Cause very financially astute. He focuses very much on pricing and margins, and that isn't the disciplines we've had in Asia. You know, we've got some pretty good operations. You know, we are we're pretty strong in China, as probably not many people know. And in China, it's about pricing actions the cause taken, frankly, and about mix issues in terms of the business. So what you're seeing is Core having a focus on creating value, and that is the change of focus in that business. We're very clear, we measure sales not by top line, we measure sales by the value it creates, and that's how we reward our people.
Is that coming through in Hong Kong as well, Mark?
No, not so much Hong Kong. Our Hong Kong operation is very modest. It's more China and Singapore where they were really the strong entities. Hong Kong, we haven't taken advantage really of the relationship we have with DBS. And we will come out to the market later this year. We are pretty set on our Asia strategy. I'm not going to name the countries in it just yet, because we will make some more very modest disposals in Asia. We have already said we will dispose of South Korea as one, and Taiwan as another. There'll be one or two others as well. And Core is very set in the strategy. We'll announce that later in the year. For competitive reasons, we're not going to announce that now, but we'll give you more clarity a bit later. On the UK, Robin, do you want to pass your comment?
Hi, Blair. There's a couple of things going on. In terms of your questions, basically on rate, the reason for the overall premium reduction wasn't really rate. If you look at year-on-year, the rate was pretty much flat. So therefore, why did the premium come down? What we decided as we went into Q1, given both the tort reform and the gender directive, was to be fairly prudent in terms of new business as well as our renewal prices. Going through that period, we probably also became a little bit more, from a risk selection perspective, we took on higher quality risk, which reduced the overall average premiums as well. So they were the key impacts, or the effects that were going on. I think you also had one question about proportion of the business in Ontario on motor. It's probably best to hand over to Maurice for that.
Thanks, Robin. Blair, over the last 4 years, we've optimized our portfolio weights, and our Ontario auto has fallen from 33% to 26.5%, and that's now in line with the weight for that line in the market.
Great. That's very helpful. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Blair.
We will now take our next question. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning. This is Fahad Chingazi calling from Nomura. I have three questions, please. First on cash, you recommitted to increasing remittance ratios, and I appreciate that UK Life remittances happen late. Besides UK Life, everything else happens late in the year. But qualitatively, could you talk about what progress you have made since the full year results to increase remittance ratios for the year? Second is on business value, new business value. You mentioned in the UK it's driven by pricing and action, but you also mentioned annuities. and I presume that means coming out of bulks in H2 last year. So could you perhaps give us the underlying improvement in VNB, excluding that impact? And sir, just very quickly on the combined ratio, your UK combined ratio is slightly worse than last year. RSA mentioned benign quarter for weather, where it appears you had a normal quarter. But was there anything else happening, for example, large losses impacting your results? Thanks.
Okay, thanks. On the cash remittance ratios, as I've said, so our remittance ratio, if you assume for the last year, or that was paid this year, was 300 out of life business. That makes our remittance ratio about 50%. Now, the market's sort of mid to high 80s, some of it higher than that. And frankly, this is going to be a multi-year journey. And I can give you some of the examples of the things we're doing without giving you obviously any quantitative guidance on it. But this will very much be a multi-year journey. And you know, we've got a long way to go. I mean, you can do the maths if you assume, say, 1.8 in terms of OCG, and we've got a 50% ratio, we can get that up to, it's a very large number and a lot more cash flow through to shareholders. Some of the things we're doing, some of them are structural. So, for example, one of the reasons of doing the internal debt the way we did was to take out what was going to become a dividend trap there. Some of it is expense, so having all these restructuring costs year after year after year comes directly off the OCG and therefore reduces your remittance ratio, and that's why we've committed to have a much more modest figure in that next year. Some of it's regulators. You have to, in a number of countries, negotiate with regulators and make sure that they're happy on passing dividends up. Now, a good example of that would have been France last year, where we had double leverage and the regulator had concerns. We fixed the double leverage, we fixed their concerns, and dividends started again. Some of it's capital. You know, there's some businesses where we'd want to hold more capital to be optimal. Some of it's product mix. There's a whole lot of little structural issues as well in there. So in each country, there's literally dozens of initiatives that we're doing over a multi-year program. And I would hope that you would see, I'll choose my words carefully, I hope you would see steady progress on that year after year. But it is a multi-year initiative. Pat, on the value of new business, you want to talk about the bulk annuities?
Yeah, I mean, thank you, Mark. The BPAs didn't make a lot of difference. The reason we exited them, they weren't a big contributor to BNB anyway. So they weren't a big number, a very small number in last year and had a very small number in this year. So the underlying change would be almost identical with all of our BPAs.
Sorry, so... but you are expecting the value of new business to come down going forward for the UK. That's nothing to do with mix.
It's clear, we 33%. We certainly don't expect up near 33% on that. We might expect some other countries to improve. But you can expect the value of new business in the second half of the year on UK life to decrease from that number, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, we're doing some good stuff, but I think expecting 33% to continue would be unrealistic.
Okay.
And last on the combined ratio, Robin.
Yeah. Sachin, good question. In terms of the, you're right, we also, from a weather perspective, despite it being one of the coldest quarters on record, actually, it was relatively benign from a claims perspective. So what's going on? Well, actually, last year in Q1, we had about 25 million of favourable releases, and this year we didn't have any favourable development coming through in the quarter.
I mean, thank you.
It's in line with expectations for that business in the first quarter.
Thank you very much.
And with another section, I should say, of Ireland, that we still have a lot of work to do. That's an unsatisfactory outcome.
Thank you.
We will now take our next question. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah, good morning, yes.
Hi, it's Abedin from SocGen. I've got three questions. Can I just come back on to the internal loan? Can you just kind of share your thinking with us on why it might be necessary to reduce the internal loan to less than 5.2 billion, the number that you mentioned previously. And then you also mentioned some non-cash options to reduce that internal loan, and I understand you're not going to go into what they might be. But can you just give us an idea what sort of time frame those options may kind of may come through? And then secondly, just on Poland, when should we be expecting the value of new business to grow there? And then finally, on the U.S. disposal, I think this the question may have been asked, but I couldn't quite catch the answer. Can you just clarify if all the necessary regulatory hurdles have been met there?
Okay, thanks. Internal loan, I'm not going to give any more detail today on the non-cash ways to reduce it. And we are committed and sticking to our 600 million of cash reduction over the next 3 years. I set up the full year results. There's no magic formula here. There's no formula regulators have got. It's just an ongoing discussion about what's the best level. I know that some of you have said in the analyst reports that they think that level's too high. Well, that remains to be seen. But as I said, the key thing here is there's a number of non-cash things we can do, and this will be an ongoing debate, as it should be in every life insurance company or in general insurance company, about what the optimum level of internal debt is. But there is no magic formula, and our 600 target on a cash basis over the next 3 years remains intact. Poland is, we've got some interesting stuff going on there. It's a nice business, it's a good cash contributor, and frankly it is a bit of a change of strategy in Poland. Poland is a very attractive market in our view. We have a very strong position in Poland, and we have good partnerships in terms of distribution there, and it will take a little while to get that business up to where we expect it to be in terms of growth and value of new business. So just to be clear, there's a change in focus for that business. As you saw at the full year results, we went through each country and said where we're focusing the attention, and Poland is on value of new business growth. Now historically that's probably been on cash flow growth, and in a growth market like that we need value growth, value of new business growth. I'm not going to give any guidance on when I think that will happen, except to say that they have clear plans in place, but it is a change of strategy for them. The US?
Sure. Not to add to what I said earlier, the regulatory approval processes are ongoing. The filings are in front of those regulators in Iowa and New York. It is a lengthy process. I think we know that in these US approvals, but the completion is expected in the course of the second half.
Yeah, it definitely will not be in the first half, and it was never planned to be, I should point out, I guess.
Okay, thanks. Can I just come back just very briefly on the pressures around the internal loan? You mentioned regulatory kind of discussions. Is it right to kind of think the pressure is coming from the regulator, or is it an internal kind of dynamic?
I'd be wrong to say that the regulator wasn't actively involved, but we certainly went to them, and the regulator didn't set a target, or they haven't got a formula. But we went to them and we said, for the percentage of assets, so what it was the percentage of assets were held in those funds, the foreign subsidiaries, was too high as a percentage of the overall assets, and that's really the issue. So having debt in there is quite okay, and every company has some form of debt, although it can be through branching or through subsidiaries holding other subsidiaries, which was the case in this. It was getting too high, so we formalised the loan and then we agreed to bring it down. Now, just to be clear though, we went to the legal aid and said we want to bring it down on a cash basis by 600 million over 3 years, and the regulator is supportive of that and have said they're supportive of that. And I specifically went to them and said, I want to be able to say you are supportive of our plans here to give some certainty. So in the models, you'll be very safe in assuming that we will, that to build in the 600 billion over 3 years, of which we have already paid 300. And I've said that we are looking at other non-cash flow ways as well over the long term to bring that down. And I wouldn't expect anything in the near future. but I hope to get that to a stage where you don't ask me anymore because there are clear plans, and I think we can do that, but it will take some time.
We will now take our next question. Please go ahead.
Morning, it's Kevin Ryan from Investec. Could you please give us a little bit more background on UK Life? I am surprised at the very modest reduction in volumes, given that RBS is no longer doing face-to-face advice and so on and so forth. So could you just give us a little bit of a sense of what your strategy is in the UK in the post-RDR world and how you're managing that dynamic of volume and value? Thanks.
Okay, I'll hand it over to
Kevin. Hi, David Burrell. I think the first thing to say is, I mean, we are adapting, we think, pretty well post RDR. It is early days. But, you know, over 80% of the value of our new business is unaffected by RDR. It's risk, business, annuities and protection. You're right about RBS, but on the other hand, actually our focus is not on investment business with the banks and other strategic partners. It's on protection business where we excel, and we're actually growing that business. And we would expect that to continue over the course of this year. I think on the savings side, more generally, it's a bit early to tell. The fact is, we've still got you know, the sales coming through from pre-RDR on group personal pensions and that kind of thing, so it'll take time to kind of play out there. On the individual savings side, actually, platform sales are well up on last year. But I would come back to, you know, our real focus is around value new business driven by protection and annuity business, and particularly protection through the bankers.
Thanks.
We will now take our next question. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everybody. Chris Hessen from Credit Suisse. Just a couple of questions. Firstly, one for David again on the UK. Just wondered if you could provide a little bit more detail on the VNB growth and perhaps the contribution of different business mix to that. It looked like volumes were fairly soft, but VNB progressed quite well. So just wanted to get a little bit more colour on the breakdown there. Secondly, wondered if you would provide or quantify the effect of investment markets on NAV in the quarter. And lastly, just on Poland, would be interested in your thoughts in terms of expectations on potential for regulatory reform in pensions and how you are likely to be positioned for that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Chris. The three questions. We're not going to give any more guidance in terms of mix and stuff today. We'll do that at the half year. You can assume, as I said, annuities are strong, and yeah, we're pretty competitive in the annuity market, but we have strengthened our pricing there, and that has been helped, and we haven't seen any drop off in volumes. So we're not going to give any mix of guidance today, as we don't. I'll hand over to Pat on the NAV and the investment markets, and then I'll come back to you on Poland.
Hi, Chris. We don't normally give out every element of the rec on the NAV movement, but it was a positive single digits, kind of high single digits, hence positive.
Okay.
Investment variances.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Yeah, the main impact, as we said, was pretty solid profit results with no surprises. Poland, we are very active in these discussions on Poland. There's a lot of noise about it, and it's a highly political issue that happens in election times. And as you know, we are strong there. Just to be clear, though, we're already capped out, as you probably are aware, in terms of the earnings from pensions over there that we can get. So it's not a contributor to growth. It's not a contributor to new business. It hasn't been for some time. It's a bit unclear how that will flow through, and we are active. I think it's always challenging from a
customer perspective over there, if the government says it's going to take funds that are effectively in private provision and nationalise part of it, I think that's challenging, and that's all playing out in the media and the politics. There will be, we expect, some announcements coming up from the government, and then over a period of time that may have an impact. But just to be clear, this isn't part of our ongoing new business. This is part of our enforced base at the moment.
Okay.
We're very close to it. As we get more information, we'll share it, and we are active in planning, if I can say that much.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We will now take our next question. Please go ahead.
Hi, hello. It's Andy from Exxon BNP Paribas. A couple of questions, if I could. First one is again on the internal loan, I'm afraid, sorry. Just when you talk about the non-cash actions that you can take, obviously there's two ways this can go. You can reduce the internal debt, or you can improve the remittances to the holding company. And the way you seem to be suggesting it is that the non-cash action that you make actually reduces the internal debt. Is that the way I should interpret it, or should I look at it as a mix of improved remittances and also reduced internal debt? And the second question was about the UK business margin improvement. Coming back on Chris's point, maybe you could split out the benefit of the expense contribution to the new business margin, and maybe talk about some of the things that have happened post-RDR, i.e. lapses, where they've changed. And the final point is on the OCG generation. Right, that there was a 100 million one-off financing benefit last year, so actually on a like-for-like basis, the OCG has actually improved by 100 million year-on-year. And when I think about the life business and the improvement in costs, should I be thinking about the benefit in terms of reserving coming through the end of this year or end of next year? Thank you.
Okay, a lot of questions there. On the remittance, I know you guys are trying to get me into detail, which I'm not going to get into on that particular issue today. Well, I'll give you a little bit of guidance, though. So as you said, you've improved remittances from that business. But remittances would be just, that's cash, isn't it? So the way you should think about this is other structural ways we can reduce that loan. And it's structural rather than cash. Now, if you go back to our investment thesis is improving cash to our shareholders year after year after year after year. And so we'll take actions that will improve that. But I'm not going to go into any more detail yet. There's a lot of work going on, but this is a very long-term initiative. Some of the things we're talking about on that are years, but what will come at the right time is appropriate plans, and we'll share them. I don't want everyone to get too overexcited about it yet. We've been consistent with what we said on this, and it's 600 million cash over 3 years. The OCG pack, just while on that, do you want to just cover that?
Yeah. Hi, Andy. You're right to say that there was just over 100 million positive one-time benefit last year in UK life. And so the underlying is up. It's actually a bit less than 100 million, Andy. I wouldn't want to get too carried away. The way the roundings work, it's the underlying is up, but it's a bit less than 100 million. On the capitalisation of expense reductions, we haven't done that yet. Obviously, as time goes on, you know what actuaries are like, Andy. It's devil's own job getting them to factor these into the embedded value calculations. I've got some listeners smiling at me. So as we go forward, obviously, as we lower expenses, they will begin to flow through into embedded value, which will flow through into all the key metrics. We haven't captured that as of now.
Yeah, it's more, the expenses in that business are down. I think the UK life business has been one of our leaders in expense reduction, the work they've been doing, which is great. The biggest improvements here, though, I mean, there's been pricing changes across all sorts of books, but as I said, annuities is one of the key. And I keep on saying, I'm trying to manage expectations here, maybe unsuccessfully, but I'm trying to manage expectations that we would not expect our growth rate for the group to end up the year at 18%, and we would not expect UK Life to be anywhere near that at the end of the year. Yes, it has had a very satisfactory quarter.
And reduction in the internal debt. I know you don't want to set any sort of guidance. I'm just trying to get my head around how you balance the. Obviously, the question was trying to get the head around the balancing of you know, if you do take action which is non-cash related, which reduces the capital requirements of AAL, to what extent do you decide to pay down the internal debt, and to what extent do you decide to improve the cash of the holding company? I think, you know, obviously from previous comments, I thought the 5.2 was kind of a fixed number, if you like, and any further action you took would lead to higher dividends. And now we seem to be suggesting that maybe it's a mixture of two. I'm just trying to understand what's happening there. Thank you.
I think the way to think about this is they are related, but only partly. I mean, I think a lot of people are trying to, and you're not, but I think a lot of people are trying to assume that, you know, internal debt is the same as external debt, and clearly it's not. You know, if we merge them both together, what happens to the internal debt is the easiest way to think about it. The actions, if we can, I'll phrase it this way. If we can improve the capital position, it gives you much more flexibility to pay dividends out of that group. So reducing the internal debt by doing structural actions just gives us more flexibility over time. But from a modelling perspective, just assume the 300 this year, which we've already done, and 150 and 150. So 150 next year, 150 the year after, from a cash flow perspective. Then as to what we can pay out of that, well, that depends on the performance of that business fundamentally. I know there's been concern on internal debt, and I am signalling that shouldn't be as much concern as probably some think on that aspect. It depends on the performance of that business. But I really aren't going to go into any specifics about the actions we're going to take, because we will come to you at the right time and be clear on what we're doing and make sure we can deliver what we say we can.
Great, thank you very much.
We will now take our next question. Please go ahead.
Good morning, it's Oliver Steele at Deutsche. Two questions. The first is, given the rise in the MCEV, I was a bit surprised not to see the economic solvency ratio pushing up a bit further than it did, so I just wonder if you can reconcile the difference. And then secondly, following up on Andy's question on the OCG, slightly under 100 million increase underlying, I guess it's not on the non-life side. Within the life, what's driving that? Is that lower strain on new business, because certainly that improved dramatically second half versus first half last year, or is that the gross cash flow coming off the life business?
Okay, thanks a lot. You're right on the OCG, it is lower strain, and there's been some good work done last year on that, and also in the first quarter, so and there's still a lot more work to do, just getting efficient. We have reduced capital strain in the business quite a bit over the last period, and you are seeing that play through. On the MCV, Pat?
In terms of the actual economic capital surplus, the non-pro forma number, that went up by $1 billion, which is a combination of things, as you refer to, Oliver, the MCV increasing, but also things that were pro forma actually now being completed, so they go into the actual number. The MCV also included improvements in the US, so obviously that is not included in the pro forma number because we've excluded that.
Okay, sorry, just to come back on that, because the pro forma solvency ratio barely moved. I mean, I think it was a 1%. So you're saying that, by implication, most of the MCE movement was US?
No, not most of it. Some of it was. A portion of it was related to the US. So the US capital surpluses went up. On an economic basis and on a local basis, for that matter. What we've reflected is a bit coming through on the economic basis. You could make an argument for saying, well, that would mean we'd receive higher proceeds, so stat surpluses are higher. We haven't reflected that, so we've been quite cautious in how that flows through to the pro forma number.
Okay, and I'm just trying to work out what the sort of offsetting factor is, because is the economic solvency, is there a dividend here that we should be taking into account?
Oh, well, over the first quarter, yes. Obviously, the dividend is factored in at the Q1 numbers. It's not in at the full year number.
Okay. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. We will now take our next question. Please go ahead.
Yeah, morning all. It's Marcus Barnard from Oriel Securities. Just like to take you to task on Ireland a bit, if I may. I mean, you're losing volumes and margin on both GI and life, and that sort of takes some doing. And I just wonder what's going on there. I mean, is it just the economy and lower volumes, or have you got a problem here with morale and reputation and your public image, particularly after your history of making acquisitions, mergers, opening a European hub and closing it down? And I'd like to know why you think cost-cutting is going to fix this, other than you can't think of anything else to do. Thanks.
Okay, the Islanders have complicated. There's a whole lot of moving parts. We'll try and explain some of them. But I don't think it's a reputational issue so much, but it is a change of business strategy there. And look, some of it's market, but I don't think we can sit here and use the market as the excuse for what we're doing. I think it's more what we've been doing, and it'll take us some time to fix. We've been taking rating action. We've been deliberately reducing our volumes. We've been fundamental cost cutting. And that will have an impact on the morale and the business for sure. And we're quite open about that. We have still got a lot more work to do, and we would expect that to improve throughout the year. And it's a disappointing outcome, and I guess that's one of the lowlights and a pretty solid set of results. Maybe I'll pass over to Robin to ask more comment on.
Yeah, just a bit of detail on that, Marcus. You know, year over year, we'll have taken our cost down by about 25%. In the Irish business, and we've probably got a little bit more to go. What we found is, from an underwriting perspective, both on the personal line side and on the commercial line side, when I stood back from it, but really the whole book we needed to re-underwrite. We've got the benefit now of using all of the expertise from the UK market to help do that, and we're going through that process. Necessarily, that means that we're walking away from some markets, we're walking away from some brokers where we just can't, we don't feel in the medium to long term we can make good returns for shareholders. So we are, you know, purposefully reducing our premium, which actually puts some pressure on the expense base itself. That said, I think given the progress that's been made to date and the actions that have been taken, you know, it will take a while for it to come through in the earnings. But actually, from a morale and motivation perspective, I think we hit a low point last year, but we're actually really picking it up. We've got real clarity of strategy, and I'm confident as we go through 2014, you'll start to see the results turning around strongly. I think David was just wanting to say something quickly on the volumes on the life side, I think.
Yeah. Marcus, we exited the joint venture with Allied Irish Bank at the end of Q1 last year. That's reflected a bit in the volumes, but actually excluding that, sales volumes were flat. We've actually improved the value of new business in that business by a range of actions, including pricing, withdrawing from unprofitable products, as well as quite an aggressive cost program. So I think we're quite confident that we'll be able to improve the overall financial performance of the Irish Life business this year.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
The other thing that I should probably mention, Ireland needs to be kept in a little bit of context. It's 3% on the non-life of our business and 2% on the life, so it's pretty modest. Nevertheless, as we keep on saying, it's unsatisfactory, and it's up to us to reflect it, turn it around.
Okay, thanks.
We will now take our next question. Please go ahead.
Hi guys, it's Andy Hughes. As a former general accident employee, I'd just like to congratulate you on resurrecting the brand. I wonder, could you talk a bit more about what you're planning to do with the brand? Because it seems as if the idea of the general accident brand in the motor market, obviously you've had relatively weak UK motor revenue, but as I understand it, the idea is Quote Me Happy is internet-based only, so appeals to kind of old people like me paying £300 a year for their car insurance, but younger people want to buy via the phone. And that was the idea of relaunching the general accident brand. So is the idea to sell more car insurance to younger people again? And are you thinking that's now an attractive market again? Thank you very much.
Oh, Andy, I'll hand it over to Robin. I should say that we've got so many ex-employees from general accident, the target market.
Actually, I mean, joking aside, actually, when we did do the testing as to the brand that we'd go with, General Accident did test really well, and it still resonated well with customers. In terms of what are we doing strategically? 20% of all customers who shop on, or over 20% of all customers who shop on aggregators, still want to actually complete that sale by talking to somebody. As you said, Quote Me Happy actually is all internet, so we were really missing out on 21% of customers. And therefore, what we've done is we've developed GA on exactly the same platform as a low-cost platform as the Quote Me Happy platform, which gives us the opportunity to capture our target customers, actually, right across the board in terms of age range, that we couldn't previously. And as you know, it's such a from a cost competitiveness perspective, it's such a tricky market. You know, you've got to make sure you've got your pricing points exactly right, and the General Accident brand and that operating model allows us to do that. So, you know, it's very early days at this stage, but hopefully we're going to emulate some of the success of Quote Me Happy.
Thank you very much. We will now take our next question. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes, you can.
Oh, hi there. So it's Paul Diaz from RBC. I just really wanted to have a quick question on disclosures, because clearly you've changed the disclosures, so you're no longer splitting out the mix in the UK, which you've said that you're not going to do. I just wondered what the thinking was there, and sort of why we now have a split of the Asian business, which is obviously a much smaller part of the business and the investment case, but we don't get to see what's going on in the UK annuities and pensions lines.
Hi, Paul. Generally, what we tried to do was to just simplify the pack a bit, so it's shorter overall. And to really focus on the five key metrics. So what we've tried to do is de-emphasize the amount of sales data we put in there and just focus on VNB, expenses, etc., combined ratio, etc. So similarly, when we get to the half year and the full year, we will try and simplify and streamline the pack a bit. Likewise, to really kind of focus on cash remittances, value of new business, expenses, etc.
Okay.
As we do that, by design, we will be cutting some stuff out, because it is important we actually make the pack a bit shorter and simpler. As we go through that, people really find there's a bit of information we cut out you really want, then feed it into Dave Elliott and we'll take account of that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think it just strikes me as a little bit strange that, you know, the UK is more than half of the business, and we don't get any kind of breakdown of that. In the numbers, and you know, a number of questions have been asked about, you know, the performance of the annuities business and the performance of the pensions business, which we, you know, just don't really get to see any detail on that. It seems a little bit strange.
Okay, well, as I say, we'll pick up the comment, and as David said, we went through more than 80% of our VNB is coming from the risk products of annuities and protection, and much less on the pension side. So, but again, we can pick up the disclosure points as we go forward.
Okay, thanks.
As a final reminder, if you would like to ask a question, it's *1 on your telephone keypad. We will now take our next question. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, it's James Pearce at UBS again. I wonder if you could talk briefly about external debt and a couple of points within that. Have you been active in the commercial paper market year to date? And has the, I think it's 0.6 billion balance at year end come down, or is it the same or higher even? And secondly, am I right in thinking that it feels like there's a link between getting the US proceeds and saying anything more concrete about what you're going to do with the October hybrid call? And if you could just talk around external debt in general, that'd be very helpful. Thank you.
Hello, James. I mean, really, it's not a lot of new stuff to say on external debt. As we talked about, the plans to bring it down to a ratio of less than 40% over the medium term, so kind of 3 or 4 years, and 2 months in, there's not a lot to report, to be honest with you. The only thing on the commercial paper program we're doing is we're moving from guaranteed to unguaranteed, so to the extent you see any activity, it's us doing that. We typically actually don't talk about what our intentions are on a particular call.
until actually we do it. So the reason we're not saying anything is really in line with that. So I wouldn't expect to hear anything from us on that until later in the year. I think on the US, we have been clear that, you know, getting the US proceeds in is an important part of our capital plan. So as we talked about, that's on track. And we expect that to happen in the second half of the year. But that's always been an important part of our capital plans.
And is the CP balance up or down since year end, Pat?
It's the same.
Thank you very much.
There are no further questions, gentlemen.
Okay, well, on that basis, I think we can wrap it up. No doubt we can have follow-up calls where appropriate over the coming weeks. I think everyone probably sees these results as being very satisfactory. What we're aiming for, as we said at the full year, though, is to get, and we want steady and consistent. We want to be boring. We want to be predictable, that we just keep on improving our results quarter after quarter, and that's what we're aiming to do. And you will see some volatility, I think, in value of new business, as those sort of rates would be extraordinary if we were able to continue them. And so we are, I guess, trying to manage some expectations down on that. As for the follow-up questions, no doubt we can get them back from you and provide more clarity where we're able to. So thank you, everyone, for joining us this morning.
That will conclude today's conference call. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.